served with moolah. You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Keep your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with Gabby Dunn.
Hi, I'm Gabby Dunn. Welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. Trigger warning for food and for animal exploitation. I'll pause so you can turn it off. Ooh-hoo-hoo, guys, I am excited. This episode, I think, is going to be controversial. As you know, one of my favorite aspects of Bad with Money is talking to people who have prioritized different parts of life than I have, who have decided what their fight is and have dedicated themselves to it. Veganism isn't my fight, but I understand how it dovetails with the politics I do care about. Decolonization, exploitation, animal rights, environmentalism. Veganism has become an incredibly complex issue that makes people defensive for many reasons. Judgment, health concerns, love of the taste of animal products, claims of hypocrisy, elitism and privilege. And veganism gets a lot of bad press. Quote, this is just a disguised eating disorder. Quote, this is too much to ask. Quote, this is focusing on animals to the detriment of human rights, etc., etc., etc. You've heard them all. I get it. I get it. I get it. I hear those. And look, I'm not a vegan, but I'm increasingly interested in our food and where it comes from, and thinking about what I'm eating and where that comes from. But there's a lot of foods that are comforting to me that definitely do not fall under veganism's purview. Jewish chicken soup. Hard-boiled eggs. Butter on my sad little depression toast. Sure, I try not to eat any meat directly, like no steaks or sausages or anything, and I have swapped out my burgers for Beyond plant-based alternatives if that's an option. But for example, at a barbecue, it might not be, and so I don't really make a fuss about it. And it's not super conscious decision-making on my end, only when I have a moment and I'm thinking about it. So vegans, do I agree that every single animal product is the same level of bad? No. Someone making honey from their own honeybees on a little farm doesn't seem to be comparable to a factory farm slaughtering baby chicks by the hundreds. But ha ha, everyone has a different opinion. I'll give you an example. On my other podcast, Just Between Us, we had a woman named Jessica Gonzalez on to talk about her company Happy Organics, where she infuses honey with CBD. She also has her own bee colonies. The interview seemed so harmless. She treats her bees well, and she runs a small business. We love to see it. But I remember after that episode aired, we got a really intense email from an ecology PhD candidate who was incensed that Jessica said she doesn't use pesticides to kill mites on her bee colonies. I thought, oh, good, pesticides are bad. Well, here is a snippet of that very impassioned and informative email. Quote, by not treating colonies for mites, these types of beekeepers spread diseases to other beekeepers' colonies. Bees are known to drift to other hives while carrying mites or viruses spread by these mites. Honeybees also spread viruses to other wild bees by leaving them behind on flowers they visit via their poop. Honeybees are important, but there are other managed and native pollinators that are responsible for pollinating crops. These include mason bees and many bumblebees, among thousands of other types of bees. Not stating their importance is a detriment to the public and those trying to protect all bee species. Oh, the internet! As you can see, there is always someone with a different expertise, a different life experience, a different approach, and a different education on any topic. Believe me, I know, I have been online. But this seems especially true when it comes to animals of all kinds, farming, and what we eat and how we eat. All sorts of ethical thresholds abound, and it's nearly impossible to declare one right or one wrong within this nuanced spectrum. Just look at bees! Some prioritize honeybees. Some, like our emailer, believe that this is akin to being an anti-vaxxer, which is what they said in the email. And some people might think that this whole conversation is wild. I want to start this episode by describing my conversation with our second guest, vegan activist and environmentalist Christopher Sol Eubanks. Christopher has very strong feelings about the thoughtless ways we oppress animals, his complicated role as a black vegan, and his dream of eliminating eating meat. My conversation with him was fascinating in that his framing of animals is that viewing them as products or something we can use to get things for ourselves out of them is an incorrect lens we've been trained to accept. And I always enjoy when someone is working hard toward a better world. One there's no guarantee we'll ever realize. But someone has to try. But our first guest this week is vegan cooking YouTuber Andrew Lau, who gives specific ideas on recipes to eat vegan, foods you can make vegan at home, and the cheapest products to get the most bang for your buck. Turns out there are ways to be vegan without spending a ton, but there's always some caveats like where you live, marketing for vegan products, and reframing what foods you typically think of as vegan.
Hello, I am Andrew Lau. I have been making YouTube videos for about 12 years now, and in the past few years have pivoted into the plant-based food world. I used to do a cooking series that wasn't real cooking, but now I am doing real cooking.
You're vegan. Yes. A lot of your content's about that. How long have you been a vegan and what made you decide?
So I don't really have an official start date for my veganism. I stopped eating meat when I was 12 in March 2010. So growing up, you know, I ate the like vegan meats and like the black bean burgers. And also, you know, also drank the almond milk, also had the Earth Balance. Like my mom's didn't... never really had butter or milk around besides like my early childhood. But then I don't know, in like 2018, I was eating mostly plant-based and I had a roommate who was vegan. And I feel like that was the big, and I started making my own plant-based meats at home.
What do you mean you make your own meats?
Oh yeah. like seitan. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, like these mock meats, like, well, so growing up, I would eat these field roast sausages and a lot of these, like, vegan products, and then one day, I just, like, got this cookbook, and it taught me how to do this once, it was, like, a light switch of, like, oh my god, I can make all this stuff at home, like, so easily, and yeah, just seitan, Vital Wheat Gluten.
But, like, that's an example, like, you're able to make your own meats from ingredients?
Yeah. Well, so I make a lot of seitan, which is, it's like an old ancient like Buddhist practice that's been around forever. But essentially how you used to make it, now I can just order Vital Wheat Gluten on Amazon or get it at a store. And that it's essentially just gluten. It's essentially you're washing all of the starch out of flour until you're just left with the gluten, which is protein. So you can turn it into like so many, like I make a seitan like Thanksgiving turkey. I can do like a little shredded chicken thing. And you know, you just throw like a bunch of other stuff in with it, like onions, like seasonings, tofu, beans, seasonings, etc.
Is it expensive?
No. Making it by scratch, it is so much cheaper than buying in the store because I can get this like 4-pound bag of Vital Wheat Gluten for, I don't know, like $13, $14.
How much food does that make?
Well, it's hard to say because like you can make a super simple seitan with like essentially just that and like vegetable broth and some seasonings. And that is obviously like the very cheap version of doing that. But, you know, and usually I throw in like some tofu and some beans and some like miso paste, which can be more expensive.
So where do you find most of your recipes?
I'm a big cookbook boy. So I love like getting a cookbook and then like going through it and making all the recipes that I want to make from that. And there'll be a lot of times where I'll learn a technique, or there have been a lot of times throughout the years where I pick up a technique from one recipe and then I feel like you can kind of just like use that. Like you don't really need to follow a recipe to do the same thing. But the internet, you know, like people are always popping up on my For You page and like Instagram Explorer. And so, you know, social media, random. Minimalistbaker.com was like, I don't know if you're familiar.
Just a celebrity in your world.
Oh my gosh, I grew up. Yeah, Minimalist Baker was like my first like relationship with recipes, if you will. I was like 13, like making banana muffins. Anyways, there'll be people who are listening and who are like, I love Minimalist Baker.
It'll be like a little inside joke for the other vegans.
Yeah. Oh, well, she's not vegan anymore. Drama. A few years ago, she, yeah.
Wow, controversy. I love hearing about controversies in worlds I'm not involved in.
Oh yeah, people were pissed, dude. People were like if you go on Amazon, her like cookbook reviews are like, I'm throwing this in the trash. I could never.
Why are vegans like that?
I don't know. I'm definitely like not like that. I'm definitely like, when she announced that she was like eating eggs or chicken because her doctor said to or something, I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. Like, I'll miss the recipes, but also like, calm down, everyone. Like, she has contributed so much to like the space. I don't know. I'm not mad at her.
Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, even doing this episode, it's kind of funny, like, because I feel like it's something that is like controversial. Like, people have a lot of opinions about it. And like, so what do you see? I'm going off script here, but what do you see like in terms of like the controversies or the community?
Oh my gosh. It's hard because there's so many different reasons people might pursue a plant-based diet or a vegan lifestyle. I'm in some like vegan Facebook groups. I mean, I don't like log on to Facebook every now and then, but I was in a seitan group, and you know, there were a lot of recipes there. So a few years ago, I joined that community, and that was a source. But I remember, so KFC just got a vegan chicken or something. And in one of these groups, there are a bunch of people like, I would never, like, how could you people eat there? It's fried in the same oil as the other chicken. Like, it's not vegan. Like, how, I can't believe people are excited about this. Like, people just going off in the group chat. But then, like, PETA comes out and is like, guys, shut up. You're being annoying. They, like, put out a statement that was like, just eat the chicken. Like, it's not hurting an animal because it was cooked in the same oil. You're just hurting them further by making a big ruckus about it being cooked in the same oil. I never had to worry about craving fast food. Like, and now I do. Like, I'm going about my work week and I'm like, I want to go to KFC and try that new chicken. And I have never driven past fast food restaurants and been like, oh my gosh, I could stop and like just get like a burrito and it has vegan meat in it or something like that. So that is new. That is something I'm having to manage, especially once Taco Bell has like a vegan beef. I don't know what I'm gonna do. That's gonna be dangerous.
because it's like, on the one hand, it's making it more accessible, I think, to people.
Oh no, it's definitely good. I'm sorry. Let me backtrack. It's
I see both sides. I see the idea of like, oh, well, now these things that were off limits to me are suddenly available to me.
Yeah. And I'm not as strong as I thought I was.
Do we trust them? We trust that it's vegan?
I trust if it's like KFC, Beyond Chicken by Beyond. I trust that that's going to be vegan because Beyond is like a big company with like investors and they can't have like drama.
There's always these sort of criticisms of like, is it possible to be vegan without being rich?
Probably, but probably not as comfortably.
But it's interesting. I was asking my partner about it. My partner was like, you know, it's funny when it's like you have to be rich to be vegan, because one, a lot of people who are not wealthy are vegan, and two, my partner was like, a lot of the stuff that people who aren't rich eat anyway are like rice and beans you would eat anyway, or like there's certain a conception of veganism that a lot of people are kind of accidentally already eating vegan because they don't have any money.
No, it's interesting. So we were talking about things being more available in restaurants, but I feel like what I've also noticed is other people's perspectives. So like beans and rice, that's vegan. That's always been vegan. But then KFC, new Beyond Chicken, vegan chicken headline. Like there's no headlines about beans and rice. So I feel like these big expensive products that are in the headlines are making a big impact on how non-vegans think of vegan food.
Where do you find most of your ingredients, and what ingredients do you find yourself reusing a lot?
I love, well, so grocery store wise, love Sprouts, love Trader Joe's, And I will say, love Whole Foods. Something like Whole Foods, whole paycheck, like, yes, it's expensive. But I am shocked sometimes because I think sometimes vegan foods are cheaper at like a Whole Foods, a Sprouts versus like a Ralph's, a Kroger. When I go out of town, food is way more vegan food is way more expensive back in St. Louis than it is here. So that's like another thing that separates me from perhaps a normal vegan in the middle of America who's trying to eat more plant-based.
Right, because it's in LA, more people are vegan probably. It's more expensive for them to probably keep on their shelves.
Exactly, yeah. It's crazy, like they'll be, well, they don't have it anymore, but like this meal goes, a meal goes block of butter, which is my favorite vegan butter. It was $3.99 at Trader Joe's. But then when I go back to St. Louis, it's like, I've seen it to be like $7.50. Another big thing is sales. I am such a sale fiend. Whenever there, like literally the other day, I was coming back from a restaurant and there was like a Whole Foods in the same shopping center. So I just like walked into Whole Foods, went straight to the plant-based section, looked for the sale tags, didn't see anything I wanted, and then I left. It's like, frankly, a hobby of mine is going to grocery stores and buying things on sale. But something I've been doing now for the past 2 years is Miyoko's, that brand I was talking about. Every year now, at the end of the year and like the first couple of days of January, I've noticed they do like a 40%, like a 35% off sale of all of their products at Whole Foods. And so I've been stocking up and freezing them.
Yeah, I see a lot of, I'm on a Reddit group for being frugal. And I see a lot of, Tupperwares, they'll just like make, you know, for 2 weeks, they'll make something that is cheap, largely vegan in some ways, other than maybe like cheese. And they'll freeze it, you know, for lunch and dinner. And they'll have, I mean, it's like, you know, these people are showing off, I think, but there's like big pictures of like, you know, 14 Tupperwares, 35 Tupperwares, whatever, filled with stuff. And that's not a group for veganism. And like, you wouldn't necessarily think that it's vegetarian or vegan, but a lot of what they're putting together, they're, you know, it's cheaper to get a bunch of chickpeas or, you know, put a bunch of peanuts in something than it is for these people to go and buy chicken. So it is like kind of interesting, the different perceptions of veganism versus like the reality of what people actually end up eating if they're trying to save money.
Another thing that's in a lot of vegan products is TVP, or textured vegetable protein, or sometimes it's called textured soy protein. But it's essentially, well, I don't really know what it is, so I'm not going to try and explain. But it's in a lot of vegan products now that some people would be like, oh, wow, that's expensive. However, literally like decades ago, they would put it in the school lunch meat to make it like last longer as like a cost thing. So they used to like literally put it in normal meat to make it less expensive.
Once you probably got better at figuring out what you wanted to do or make, what was the learning curve in terms of spending?
Yeah, there's definitely, I feel like I go through phases or I'll like pick up little things where it's like I get obsessed with it for a couple of weeks and then it just adds to my repertoire. You mentioned beans, like garbanzo beans. I like buy those dried and I'll make a big batch of them. And it's just something I learned a couple of years ago, but now ever since I like always have dried beans and that is like my preferred way. They're also way better than canned if you just make them yourself, and it's pretty easy once you get the hang of it. And that's the thing. I feel like some things are easy a year after you started trying them. So definitely it can be a slow curve.
Yeah. And like in terms of knowing how much you need for nutrients and things like that, how did you learn that?
My veganism sort of came after this phase that I am talking about. So I sort of had that in my background. I frankly think becoming vegetarian when I was younger was maybe an aspect to that, was sort of wanting to have like control and over what I eat.
Yes, wanting to control things, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like veganism has honestly like sort of helped me in that sense, because now I just kind of eat Like, I don't track anything, which, you know, maybe I need to, like, talk to my doctor, make sure I'm getting everything I need. But
like, how do you know that you're getting the right nutrients, or what tips would you be like? This is an easy way to get that.
You know, eat a bunch of colors, make sure you got a good multivitamin with like some B12.
What are the tricks that are really cost effective?
Making big batches of beans and rice and freezing them into portions. I have these little deli containers, and they're like perfect little, the thin little small ones. They're like perfect for freezing grains and that sort of thing. And then you just have them there. Buying in bulk, buying when things are on sale and freezing them if you do want the big, like Just Egg or Beyond Meat. Like, I frankly never buy those things when they're full price. I just like only get them when they're on sale. Learning to make your own like seitan, or something like that, that will definitely save you a lot of money. And better for your health, I guess, or you can have control over how much sodium and stuff goes in it.
What if you're at a restaurant with your friends and you're like, oh, I don't know if there's vegan options here. Are you the person who's like, I'll just eat these beans? Like, I'll just order green beans or whatever.
Yeah. Although I feel like so many of my friends like tend to eat plant-based. I don't necessarily find myself at a restaurant where there aren't any options. And maybe that's also another living in Los Angeles thing. Like, definitely, I remember growing up, it was a lot of, I'd like the side of green beans, the side of rice, the side of spinach, the side of carrots. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, now there's so many options in so many places.
Maybe less so in other parts of the US, but I just remember, and like for road trips, I remember years ago, a friend of mine finding out that Oreos were vegan. And then just every road trip would just go, if we went into like the 7-Eleven or the gas station or something, they would just be like so many packets of Oreos because that's the only thing that they could eat. But I think it's funny. The things that are, they're like, oh, vegan equals healthy. When it's like, my friend at that time, I think, subsisted on Oreos and red wine.
You know, people will look at that and be like, I don't get why people say veganism are healthy, because look at this person eating Oreos. But then also it's like, well, look at this other person who's eating like Whole Foods, and they're healthier than all of us. So like, I don't know. I feel like eating vegan can be anything you want it to be. It can be good for the environment. It can be bad for the environment.
How is it bad for the environment?
Well, like if I'm like ordering like specialty vegan products from a different country, or if I'm like in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, let me get these sausages that were shipped across the country on a truck. I don't know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's not a monolith. It's not all one thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like you can find examples of whatever point you want to make in the vegan world.
Is there a good middle ground for people who don't want to go completely vegan, but they want to like take steps to reduce waste, reduce animal products?
Yeah. I don't think you need to like define it. Like, just do it one step at a time. Yeah. If you're interested, then you're already doing something great.
Veganism way more accessible right now than people think it is in terms of financially?
See, that's a hard question, because part of me wants to say yes, but then also it's like, I'm sure veganism is less accessible than I think it is in some places.
Yeah, the fast food is a very interesting thing, or even trying to move these types of products or into areas where there's less grocery stores and more bodega type things, or even you know, it's interesting, the messaging, perhaps, like less sort of like you're demons for killing animals and more sort of like, did you know that you could basically be vegan with the stuff you're already buying? Like that kind of maybe you guys need like a PR overhaul.
Yeah, no, the vegan community needs a lot.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you and more about you?
Thank you so much for having me. You can find me across various social media platforms with the username Andrew Lau, and any other places with the name Andrew Lau.
Next, we have Christopher Sol Eubanks, who works toward and dreams of a world without animal exploitation. A world that doesn't yet exist and may take a long time or may never happen at all. But he has to have hope.
My name is Christopher Sol Eubanks. I am an animal rights activist, a human rights activist, and I've been vegan for about almost 6 years now. And I have a nonprofit called Apex Advocacy, and we advocate for animal rights. And my platform is essentially, my nonprofit is essentially trying to help fight animal agriculture in Black and brown communities, and particularly marginalized communities, and help these communities fight against animal agriculture. So that's a small rundown.
This is so interesting that you brought that up. I'm jumping ahead in my questions, but we did an episode about veganism on my other podcast, and a couple of people who wrote in were farmers who talked about, and I wrote down exactly what they said because I wanted to ask you about it, but it was like the critical role animals play in stewarding land and alternatives to factory farming and all this sort of talk about local food. And so it's interesting that you brought that up right from the jump. Like what are they talking about and what are they getting wrong, or what is your opposition to that?
Typically when I hear arguments like that, it's typically people saying that, you know, we need animals to, you know, to keep the land in check. And, you know, if we weren't doing these things to animals, you know, like their bodies produce, like cows' bodies produce more milk than their, you know, babies could consume, and it would be damaging to them otherwise. So typically, I mean, I think that's what those arguments typically fall under. But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that we've created these situations because we've been exploiting animals so long.
Yeah, can you talk about what the activism involves with that? Like what needs to change, or what would you like to see change based on, and also like what's happening?
Well, I would say the biggest thing that could change that, those types of situations in particular, would be the subsidies. These industries get so much money from the government to continue to exploit animals that, you know, without those subsidies, we would have to address these real concerns. You know, we wouldn't be able to give these industries and companies so much money to exploit animals and damage the environment. But if those subsidies weren't there, then we would really have to think more about forward and look at how we can really fix these issues. So really going after these subsidies and making sure that instead of being able to buy a hamburger for a dollar, it should really actually be reflective of the true cost. The true cost is probably somewhere from $10 to $20 for a typical hamburger. That's how much a hamburger should be. Meanwhile, you have fruits and vegetables that don't get these subsidies that should actually be much lower than they even are right now if they were to get subsidies. So it's about making sure that we hold people in power accountable and fighting for more lobbyists and fighting for more government change to help support systems that, one, don't exploit animals, and true, support more plant-based foods.
How are the animals being exploited? I know that's a broad question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so many ways. It's honestly like a laundry list. You know, even when people think about consumption of eggs, you know, ultimately, male chicks and female chicks, when they are hatched in these industries, they are separated from the day they are born, from males to females, because they separate them because the males don't produce eggs. So essentially, within minutes or hours of being born, all of the males are separated and killed, instantaneously. They're pretty much put on a conveyor belt and sent into what's called a macerator, and they're grinded alive, you know, essentially within the first day of their life. And that happens to billions of male chicks every day. Female chicks, their bodies are, they have been, I will say, selectively bred to produce a lot more eggs than they normally would in nature. Their bodies will produce maybe 12 to 15 eggs a year, which is essentially a part of their menstruation. But instead, we've selectively bred them to produce hundreds of eggs a year. So we're exploiting their bodies and putting their bodies through this intense process, you know, essentially almost every day when it should be once a month, just because we want to consume their eggs. You know, this similar things happens to cows. They're forced to be pregnant every 9 months because their bodies produce milk only after giving birth. So in order for these industries to keep milk on shelves, they have to make sure that these cows are constantly pregnant. So they constantly impregnate them essentially every 9 months. And once they give birth, they separate the baby cows from the mother cows. So they're splitting up their family dynamic, and they're putting their body through intense pressure of having to be pregnant every 9 months. And when their bodies break down, after 5 or 6 years of being constantly pregnant, they're sent off to slaughter. They're killed then because they are no longer profitable to these industries. The similar things happen to bees. Bees are exploited and mass produced and manipulated to produce more honey. It's so many ways that these industries exploit animals.
I mean, it's interesting. It's controversial because, like, we've had, you know, I would think that those people would argue, well, but there's a difference between, like, me being a beekeeper in my house and making my, like, Etsy honey versus, you know, these big factory farms where I think animals are treated like producers of just capitalism. It's just based on, you know, the creation of like, what's the most we can get out of this animal versus, like, someone saying, well, but I have one cow and I, like, sell my little milk at the farmer's market. Is there a difference there, or is it all kind of, I'm wondering if one allows the other to exist. I don't know.
I think, absolutely. And that's what I was just about to say. It ultimately comes down to us viewing animals as things that are here for us to consume. Once we draw that line, we start to justify ways we can exploit them and say, well, maybe I can exploit them in a smaller way instead of a larger way. But ultimately, if we view others' bodies, others' existence as things that are here for us to consume, honestly, that's a form of discrimination. We're stripping them of their autonomy. We're saying that your existence doesn't belong to you. It's more important for me to use your existence for something that's beneficiary towards me, regardless of how it impacts you. So as long as we contribute to this, feed into this thinking that the others are here for us to consume, it makes way for suffering and exploitation to happen on a smaller scale or a larger scale. The idea should be that we should respect these other individuals enough to not want to contribute to exploiting to them at all.
How do you view animals? What ideally would be their place?
You know, ideally, they would be able to exist harmoniously with us. But that's not the society that we've created. We've, as humans, honestly, exploited the earth. Like, we've made the earth something that is centered around our existence instead of something that we try to inject ourselves in naturally and organically. Maybe one of the things we could do is have a more zero waste lifestyle that allows animals to exist as naturally and free as possible. How that looks, I'm not exactly sure, but I think something along those lines would be what I would hope could happen.
I really enjoyed your article about, as a Black man, I felt uncomfortable becoming an animal activist. Can you talk a little bit about what that was about and the discomfort? You know, like, I think it's so interesting because we were talking before you got on, me and my producer, about how people choose how much to be militant about something. So can you talk a little bit about that article and about your, like, personal journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I ultimately became vegan after watching Cowspiracy, and I watched Cowspiracy, and at the time I became vegan because I wanted to be a better environmentalist. I didn't really understand how bad consuming animal products was for the environment. So right then and there, I transitioned into not consuming any animal products that day right after watching that film. What I didn't yet understand was the ethics behind veganism. So once I started to understand that animals are exploited and that their bodily autonomy is being stripped from them, that we are putting them in massive systems of oppression, that's when I really started to think about how contradictory I felt, knowing that all my life I've been advocating for people to not support any form of discrimination towards people of color and other marginalized groups. And all the while, here I was paying for exploitation to happen on a massive scale, pretty much through every part of my day, when I buy animal products, wear animal products. And I thought that I was, honestly, I just felt I was being very contradictory. So once I realized that, I really started to do more animal advocacy. And as I started to do animal advocacy, I began to notice that there weren't a lot of people of color. There wasn't as much diversity as I would have thought that would be within the animal protection movement. So there was a lot of times when I didn't really feel like I had a community that I could understand. I didn't go to events and see many people of color. And just as a Black man growing up in America, I was always very used to oftentimes being the only Black person in social settings. Experiencing that within the animal rights movement just felt, it just bothered me, just made me a little paranoid about why aren't there more Black people here? Is this something that the movement is aware of? Is it something that the movement is trying to address or doesn't care to address? And I think it's a combination of all of those types of things. So I was just dealing with that as I became more and more involved in animal rights. And I was reached out to by Sentient Media and Encompass about just sharing my thoughts about racial equity in the animal rights movement and just my experiences. And that was the way that I chose to express that, because I hadn't really spoken about it before in such a public manner. I really put a lot of thought into that article. So yeah, just, you know, understanding that there isn't as much equity in the movement as we would like. There aren't as many activists of color that we would like in terms of the mainstream animal rights movement. There aren't as many people in positions of power that are leading organizations, that are working at organizations. The funding that's typically used in the animal protection movement is, you know, typically not from people of color. The metrics that we use are essentially coming from, more white and Caucasian people than anyone else. So that means that the way that they see the world, the way that they view the world, is what we're judging our effectiveness on. So just realizing all of those types of things is kind of what made me realize that, okay, I'm a little uncomfortable. I think these things need to be addressed more. And not only that, I think I should start my own organization where I can talk about these things and advocate in a way that's true to me and what I want my activism to look and reflect.
I'm curious, people always talk about veganism is so white, and you know, on the ground, personal finance wise, with Black and Brown people, how do you make veganism seem doable to them?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have to do is understand that veganism can be sometimes weaponized as a way to show that people are elitist. You can buy, but you can also do the same thing with animal products. Yeah, there are people that weaponize veganism and use it to show that they are elitist, unfortunately. But I think you can also show people that there are plant-based foods that are some of the cheapest foods in the world. So you don't have to necessarily only show the side of veganism where people are buying expensive vegan food. You can tell people that, hey, you can go into the grocery store buy a bag of rice, buy some bananas, some vegetables, you know, frozen foods that are plant-based and that are extremely affordable. A lot of the foods that we have grown up on, and also education about decolonizing our mindset. We have to understand that colonization has really brought forth exploiting animals on such a large, massive scale. This isn't something that was done in Black and Brown and Indigenous communities. You know, we have more of a harmonious relationship with non-human animals before colonization. So a lot of the foods that we were eating were predominantly plant-based. Like, a lot of cultures before colonization that existed had massive amounts of plant-based options. So it's just about helping more people of color understand that, you know, consuming animals on this such large scale is something that was brought in through colonization. It isn't something that was done in our culture previously on such a large scale. People definitely feel that the ways that, you know, we have consumed animals, you know, throughout our family history, you know, we have a lot of connection to that. But I will say, on the flip side, is that we can still have those connections. We can still have those habits. We can easily veganize them, though. You know, we don't have to have turkeys being mass killed for Thanksgiving dinner. There are so many other foods that we can enjoy. The same thing with Christmas. You know, a lot of the things that we are, that we tie our emotions to, is the feeling, but not necessarily the food per se. Like, we can eat other things. We can eat food that doesn't have to come from exploiting animals. So we can have these traditions that can be veganized. And even culturally, there are so many people and cultures that are showing the way to veganize their culture, whether it be Muslim vegans. There are all types of cultures. If you look up veganism in whatever culture you are from, I'm pretty sure there's a group, there's a website, there's a page that is addressing how people of that culture are showcasing the vegan lifestyle and the vegan culture, even within that culture. So I don't think they are mutually exclusive.
What I was going to ask, I wrote down, is making things that taste like meat but aren't meat defeating the purpose?
I completely understand, because I am not one of these people that, like, love the plant-based meats. That I do eat them, don't get me wrong. It can be viewed that way, but I also view it as a way to showcase that we can still experience those same textures and same taste pleasures without contributing to exploiting and suffering of animals.
When you became vegan 6 years ago, so how did veganism affect your personal finances?
I started to think about, okay, how do I want to make sure that outside of my food and diet and the clothes that I wear and the places that I go, how can I make sure that all of those things are in line with my vegan values? And that also led to thinking about investing in a ethical and vegan manner. So I would say initially not too much, but as I started to think more about the things that I wanted to spend my money on, whether it be clothing, whether it be stocks and investments and retirement, I wanted to make sure that all of those things were in line with my vegan values.
A lot of people, the idea would be like, oh, I had to spend so much more to be vegan, you know, like, even, you know, vegan products, vegan shoes, vegan whatever. We were talking about, you know, I asked people for questions for you, and then, you know, people say, is it possible to be vegan without being rich? And then you were joking on Instagram, like, can't wait to talk about how broke I am. So, like, how does that shake with the idea of, like, vegans being like rich white people?
Yeah, I think, you know, you can do practically anything vegan and with not necessarily needing tons of money. Like, yes, I'll be the first to say I'm not well off financially.
But I wonder too, if, like, community, when you were talking a little bit, like, also thinking about money in a way, if you're thinking about your food and your diet and your clothing in a more communal way, I wonder if then the money becomes like, well, I should donate here. I should put this here. I should like, then all of a sudden that becomes almost decolonized and more communal.
I don't know if this was a vegan thing, but once I became vegan, I was like, okay, I don't really need as much to survive on.
Interesting.
My values just don't push me towards needing those things as much anymore.
We've done an episode about fast fashion here too that got a lot of feedback, which was basically people saying, you know, these shirts just end up in landfills. They don't, you know, so like what you're saying kind of reminded me of that episode too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fast fashion is such a problem. And yeah, I think I'm doing my best, and I'm nowhere near where I would like to be, but I would definitely like to live close to a zero waste lifestyle as possible.
There's ads that run on my other show that it's like vegan shampoo, vegan conditioner. And like part of me is like, what's a vegan t-shirt company? Like what are we, are we just slapping that onto things that are already vegan? Like what's happening?
I think sometimes it can be more of a approach to how you run the company. So like this hoodie, you know, has a vegan message on it. Like all of our clothing has vegan messaging. Some companies are, you know, making sure that the ink isn't animal product based, that is, has the lowest possible eco footprint.
Yeah, I guess vegan is different than animal rights based when you think about it. Would veganism be better for the US economy?
I truly believe so. I mean, we use so much resources and so many unnecessary, I guess so much transportation and all of this oil that's needed to transport animals' bodies and exploit them. If we were to reallocate the funding that the government uses for animal agriculture, if it could be used on other things.
I mean, I'm sure it's a huge lobby, but I'm sure like people think, you know, similar to oil mining and coal and things like that, where they're like, this is a family business. This is our job. This has been our farm for years. And like, we would have to do some sort of Green New Deal where you'd have to sort of do something where you move all of these people into different jobs, or you move all of these people. You know, I understand why you say we're so far away from this. Even to get people to move towards it reminds me of like universal basic income or reparations or universal healthcare, where people are like, like UBI, I remember people being like, that's crazy. And like, you know, it's living in this ideal that maybe bristles other people.
Yeah. And I think the good thing about it is that, well, it's good or bad how you look at it, but we have time. You know, these aren't things that we're going to solve overnight. You know, as much as I would love the world to transition to a vegan lifestyle, you know, we're probably generations away from that. We can reallocate these resources over time, just like any industry that changes. You know, what, maybe 100 or 200 years ago, there weren't any cars. You know, there were just people on horseback and with buggies. But once cars were invented and introduced, so it happened slowly over time. And now it's just the way of life.
Yeah, but you're saying things change and grow. The railroad to airplanes to, yeah. So this is just a thing that comes up. Like, again, we did a veganism episode for my other show and people were like, well, I have health conditions that require me to not be vegan. And I think people feel it's like a moral judgment, you know, like if someone's like, my health requires me to not be vegan and da 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 da. And like, I'm not brushing those people off, but I do wonder if sometimes it's like, because veganism is pushed as a moral standing, then people feel like they're being immoral for not being vegan for that whatever reason that they can't control.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, those sometimes people have valid concerns. Even when I went vegan, I wasn't abreast of like, okay, how do I do this? You know, what's healthy or what's not? I would say two things. One is that you can consult with your doctor or nutritionist or dietitian, because a vegan diet has, by the biggest and largest dietetic associations in the world, not just a couple of people. We're talking about groups of tens of thousands of food nutritionists that determine the eating standards for the world. They have all said that a plant-based diet is healthy and fine for people of all ages, even if you are hypothetically allergic to every plant that exists. Veganism is about making the conscious choice that anytime you have the ability to not support exploiting an animal, you make the decision not to.
Yeah, whether it's like just not buying leather, like whatever you can do.
Yeah, 100% of the time when you have the option, you should choose to not support exploiting animals. And that's what it comes down to. Because even in a life or death situation, if I had to consume an animal to survive, then at that point, we're talking about extra ordinary circumstances where I can't be judged on, you know, what I do in abnormal circumstances. You work under those circumstances. But I will say sometimes people use that as an excuse to dismiss even attempting to be vegan or not look into it or give it an honest review and see what's possible for them. But I would say if you do the research, if you consult the right people, if you tell them, hey, I'm trying to do this, show me how, as opposed to assuming that you can't.
Yeah. So before we end, you mentioned doing vegan investing and you mentioned it on the podcast and you also mentioned it in DM. So what is vegan investing?
Yeah, it's essentially the same thing, making sure that any investments that I make are from companies that don't support any form of animal exploitation or does everything that they can to not support any form of animal exploitation. So many people may not know that Tesla, they are a vegan company. They made a pledge to, you know, not use animal products in their cars. So all of their cars are vegan leather. But one of the things that I've done is just literally look up vegan stocks, like go through articles and look at these companies. And at this point, I know personally about, I would say about 20 or 30 stocks that are vegan. One is EATV. The other is VEGN. The VEGN is more of the accidental vegan companies.
Yeah.
But the ETV is more of the basket of stocks that are more of the intentional companies. So these are the Beyonds, the Oatleys. But yeah, there's tons of other vegan companies that, and when I first started investing, I was just investing in all of them.
I wonder if those will be on the rise as more and more people, because like Beyond, you know, is kind of becoming more and more popular. I wonder if the vegan stocks will, who knows? I don't know. My dad was like, cannabis is the new wave. And then like, no, it didn't really. So like, who knows? You can't predict, but
I think plant-based industries are so disruptive because they're going to become the norm, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years. We're only going to increase the amount of plant-based options that exist in our society. We see it happening with KFC. Who would have thought that you can go into Chipotle and get plant-based options? Even McDonald's, they're rolling out a plant-based burger in 600 of their stores. It is just inevitable that mm-hmm. more sustainable food, which is predominantly plant-based in terms of large scale, is going to be the norm. So that's why I think investing in these plant-based options in these companies is investing in disrupting the status quo.
Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you and more about you?
You can go to soulubanks.com, soulubanks.com to just learn more about me. I have all of my social media links on there. My handle is soul_Eubanks on various social media. And if you want to find more about my nonprofit, you can go to apexadvocacy.org. That's apexadvocacy.org. Between those two, you should be able to find out about all the work that I'm doing.
Thank you so much. Do I agree with everything Christopher said? Maybe not. But a lot of his thoughts were ones I had never heard articulated before. And this interview opened the door for me to ask myself, why do I think of animals as products and not as other beings sharing this earth? When did that start? And why? And by who? Is it correct for humans to center their experiences over those who we share the planet with? Why are we the most important? Maybe we should be, but maybe we shouldn't be. And as I wanted to say to Andrew the entire interview, hail Satan. I would love to hear from you. Be sure to send an email at gabbyisbadwithmoney@gmail.com or leave me a voicemail at 844-474-4040. You can also email me a voice memo if you prefer. Join our online communities too. We are on Instagram, Discord, TikTok, Patreon, and Facebook. Links to all of these will be listed in the episode description. And don't forget to listen to the show the day it drops so we can get on the charts and spread the word. I'm serious. Head over to Instagram or Patreon or Discord. It is popping off there. Everyone has a lot to say, and I think about this episode, there will be even more comments. Okay, thank you. Love you guys. Bye. Done.